Housing makes up 6% of America's greenhouse gases. Government is, to a great extent, controlled by utilities. 40% of all carbon dioxide comes from the real estate sector globally. F2R is a building company, type of house that you and I could build. So there's a utility system attached to it, which makes its own power. It makes its own water, it gets rid of its own waste. It's completely autonomous. We don't have to give up on all our conveniences and luxuries. We just have to find technologies that help us do it without harming the environment.
Welcome to the Be Curious podcast, the podcast that champions solutions to some of the world's biggest problems. I'm your host, Louise Halton, and in every episode, we get curious about a different subject, from the food we eat and the clothes we wear to overflowing landfills and ocean plastic. All of our guests have brilliant minds and innovative ideas to allow us to lead a more sustainable, conscious, and pollutant-free life. And the best part is, this podcast isn't just about listening. It's about building a community and connecting like-minded individuals who are curious about alternative ways to enhance their lives and the longevity of the planet. And if you're curious already and you want to find out more about the many giveaways that we have from our guests who've been on the show, then why not head over to our Instagram to enter the competitions? You can see how to do that at becurious_podcast. Today, we're getting curious about housing, something that many of us take for granted. But with a growing population, there's constantly the need for more homes. And with the knowledge of more renewable energy, we asked today how we can make housing more sustainable. So joining us for this conversation all the way from Lake Tahoe, I'd like to welcome the CEO and founder of F2R, Stefan Larsson. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Do you want to start by talking a little bit more about what F2R actually does?
So F2R is a building company. We designed a special type of building envelope. So these are structurally engineered panels that we build in a factory in molds and that you and I could assemble on the building site in a very short time and build full-fledged homes. And then there is also an autonomous component, which is the utility system, which is based on solar power and batteries and a plumbing system that can make its own water and get rid of its own waste. So it's a totally different way of decentralizing your utilities and giving you more power.
Now, I can't wait to dive into your concept in a little bit more detail. But first of all, let's just talk about housing in general. According to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, there's about a shortage of over 7 million homes for this nation's 10.8 million low income families. Was it this issue that inspired you to act, or was there another reason that you came up with this concept?
Well, originally, it was a concept to help alleviate homelessness. And that is what the first prototypes and designs were all about. And it was really about creating hazard housing for people who are temporarily homeless or unhoused. And what we know about homelessness is that a lot of people lose their housing at one point or another in their lifetime. And if they don't find something within a certain amount of months or weeks, then they're at risk of becoming chronically homeless. One of the big problems that you see, a lot of people have mental issues, but often mental issues actually come from not having a home and living in a park and being, you know, unprotected. I think anyone could, with a little bit of empathy, could really relate to that, you know, that eventually that kind of takes a mental toll, right?
I know you have your own personal story with that as well.
Yeah, so I experienced homelessness with my mom when I was 12 and my parents got divorced. My father lived in a different city and we were couch surfing around with friends. And at that age, coming from a nice home, going living on the couch in other people's homes was just an awful experience. You know, it wasn't like living on the street, but I feel like I have an affinity to people who do. I feel I can relate to what it's like in some maybe limited way, but it certainly hits home for me.
Yeah, well, I think it's great that now at this point in your life, you know, with a very successful sports company behind you already, you're able to take this initiative into a new business venture that's actually putting back and helping people so they don't end up in the situation you were in. So thank you for that. Let's talk a little bit more about the environmental impact of housing as it currently stands. Do you know what kind of impact it has on global warming?
So housing makes up 6% of America's greenhouse gases, and 40% of all all carbon dioxide comes from the real estate sector globally. And this, of course, is a massive problem and why we need to address it in housing.
That is a massive problem. Do you know, even, you know, if we break it down to individually, what one kind of singular family home would actually use up?
I don't know what the carbon footprint is per capita in America, but I know it's absolutely unsustainable. And we're headed to some pretty awful future for our children, for sure.
I think people don't think about it, right? You know, you go in, you switch a light on, and you don't think twice about what impact that's actually having on our environment. But the electricity and the gas and then all of the water that we're using to power and make our home functional is in excess.
Yes. I mean, it's the compounded effect, right? Because it's not just what we do individually, it's what's being done globally. And the solution is that we take action to change that. And we don't have to give up on all our conveniences and luxuries. We just have to find technologies that help us do it without harming the environment.
When we start to learn about the gas and electricity consumption that we have in these homes, why do you think it's not been addressed so far?
There's a lot of resistance in government. We got to remember, government is to a great extent controlled by utilities. Oil and gas has a tremendous influence on how things are run in America, right? And their business model is to go forward the way everything has always gone, right? And even to create doubt about whether there is a global warming or not. And most of us, you know, who believe in science, say it is. And we can look around and see all the changes that are happening in our weather just in the last 20 years alone. You know, it's so different. And yeah, that's the reason why things have not been happening at a faster click, that's for sure.
I mean, we are starting to see solar panels go up now, and I think governments are starting to subsidize that so that people will get them into their homes. So that is a little bit of progress, but it seems to be really slow.
Yeah, California is by far the most progressive state, you know, trying to do something about it. They banned gas in new construction. They've had solar power and panel incentives. I wish they would do even more, but, you know, they have a budget like everybody else. The Biden administration's new infrastructure bill has a bunch of programs to try and alleviate this, which is very good. We'll have to see how that plays out.
And I know that solar panels are something that you use on your houses. So let's come to talking about your houses then. This design is so innovative. I'm so excited to dive into all of the different areas that it covers. But where do you want to start? How does it all work?
Well, it's a very rational system. So everything is integrated and everything is plug and play. And it's designed to be a type of house that you and I could build and we could also disassemble afterwards. It's made from something called SIPS panels. It's a type of structural engineered panel. The different take that F2R has on it is that we make them in a mold so that we've designed 7 different types of panels. And they're made from polyurethane. It's a big foam core that it has. And then the siding, the outside siding, which is made in part from ocean plastics. And then the inside siding, which is like an impact sidewall, gets put into the mold and comes out as one piece. And then there's an assembly system that means that you bolt it all together. And at the end of the day, you could also disassemble it. It's more solid than a normal home. It has the highest R value, which is the insulation value. It's incredibly earthquake resistant. It's not going to blow over in a hurricane. It's just a magnificent way to build homes.
And these hands can be actually located anywhere because they're completely off-grid, aren't they?
Yes. So there's a utility system attached to it, which makes its own power. It makes its own water. It gets rid of its own waste. It's completely autonomous. And it's just the future of how we eventually will do things.
So, well, tell me how we are doing things then, because I don't understand how we cannot be connected to a plumbing system.
Right. So we're able to make atmospheric water through a condenser. So you pull basically moisture out of the air, and we can make maybe 5 to 10 gallons, 12 gallons a day with a big condensator like that, depending on the humidity that you live in. So if you live in the desert, it's going to be a bit less. If you live up in Seattle, it's going to be a lot more, or in Florida. But it basically makes all your drinking water that way. And then you have your washing system, which is a separate system that recycles the washing water. And it's clean to a drinking water standard, but of course you're not meant to drink that, but it's just meant to be your washing water. And then you have your toilet water.
There is a separate one for the toilet.
It's the third system, and completely separate from the rest. And basically the way that the toilet works is that it has a little bit of suction, so it's a pulse toilet, and it uses a little bit of water, maybe a quart of a gallon. So it flushes just like you would in your normal house, but the water will go into a big specialized tank where there are some different organic layers, and there are some worms that eat up the mass. All of this you don't know. It's just happening in the background, but it eats 80% of the mass, so that you're very, very slowly filling this tank with solids. But the solids that are processed with the worms are actually to a point where it's very benign. And we have some processes that we believe will make it just into potting soil that will have no effect. You could literally make your food in it. And then the fluids come out at the very end, and that's also clean to a drinking water standard, but then it's basically evaporated off into the air.
So three different filtration systems in total.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work, and these are really innovative ideas. Have you partnered with a lot of people in order to make this happen?
So we have some supply partners for this, and we're going for some regulatory approvals. And there's going to be a lot of testing, because obviously this has to be proven. But there are similar systems in Europe already that are doing not exactly like this, but they've already been approved and are in use there. And in America, we're a little bit behind on that, but it's something that we are driving towards. It might take some years before it's in people's homes, but this is the beginning of it. And the technologies are already there. It's already possible to do this.
So it's just a case of combining them all together and then creating this super sustainable home. Tell me a bit more about the electricity then. How is that powered? Through solar as well?
So it's solar. So it's, again, solar panels are integrated into the roof panel. And it's a special type of solar panel that doesn't that is resistant to the shading that could happen from trees. And then it has big batteries that power the house. And there may be the need for a little generator at times, but it's not something that we've incurred yet. But it's just something that might be a backup in some situations.
Okay. Maybe if you're overcast every single day, or can it actually see through the clouds?
Yeah. Or if you have a lot of snow for a long period of time. Things like that, yeah.
Okay. So it doesn't come through overcast. It'll only come through shade from trees.
So it still powers an overcast. It's just a matter of, like, if it gets covered with a snowstorm or something like that. It's not really meant for that environment, but it's something that we're testing to see if we can come up with systems where it will still work.
And when you say that you and I could put this together, does that mean it's lightweight as well? Because I certainly can't lift that much.
Yeah, it requires a little crane for some of the panels, but some of the panels you and I could easily carry. It's just a very simple way of building that doesn't require the same kind of expertise as it does to build a custom home. Yeah.
And how do the panels actually all go together then?
So it's that's a patented system, but it basically goes together a little bit tongue and groove, and then it bolts in between.
Right. And how long has this design actually taken? You said you started it during the pandemic.
I mean, I've been working on it for the last 4 years or so, maybe a little bit longer, with my friend Michael, who's an architect in Denmark. And we've started out with a different concept, but it's just kind of molded itself to this point. And now we're getting ready to build our first demo house this fall in Santa Rosa. And we found a factory in Tijuana that was willing to retool their process to make the panels the way we need them made, so that they also follow some regulatory and mandatory needs we have.
Fantastic. And I know you said that these homes can be built absolutely anywhere. So whilst I'm dreaming of one like out in the middle of the forest, they can actually be good to come together to actually combat the housing issue that we were talking about previously.
Yes. So originally the idea was to work on hazard housing for homeless and for people who experience big mass fires and things where they suddenly become homeless and have nowhere to go, and where you could erect these homes very quickly, almost anywhere, and they would work on their own out of the box. And eventually they became, we'd made designs for full-fledged, beautiful homes that could be built in Malibu and elsewhere, where you also have had fires and people are having a hard time rebuilding because the building cost is so high. This is a solution for that. I think I've shown you one of the homes that were that we designed that looks like a $5 million house, but in reality will cost less than $1 million to build. So there are all these incredible solutions there that are not really being employed today. And the way that we have been used to doing things is just... it's kind of become so outdated and so expensive that these new technologies are really starting to pop out now.
Yeah. Well, you just mentioned this $1 million home that is one that I saw the concept for. But I know we've also talked about them being really accessible for people who are on lower income. So what kind of price point would those homes be?
It's more about what the price per square footage is that you could build. These would lie somewhere in the $300 a square foot. Maybe it could be even a little bit less, but it all depends on what kind of utility system that you opt for, because then you have the cost of the batteries and the solar panels and all that. But the panels themselves make it very affordable.
Do you need to own the land that you put them on?
The very cool thing with these homes are that you could disassemble them again. So you could lease the land and then you could take your house with you when you left.
That sounds like very futuristic.
It does, but it's actually a much more rational way to build, because if you can build something that you can disassemble, it also means that when you remodel a place or if you want to add to it, it's just more panels and more glass.
So you could actually upgrade. You have another child, you need another bedroom. Let me just add on another bedroom to my house very easily.
Yeah.
Wow, that's really innovative. I'm so excited to see this actually up and working. How big actually are they then? You mentioned this $1 million Malibu home, but what kind of square footage are we looking at?
Yeah, so basically they can be any size because you just add more panels to it. The original home that we made was a little bit of a fishbowl style, and I can provide you that rendering so you can see what that looks like. But the reality is that you can just make it wider and bigger with more panels. So it doesn't have to be any one size. And that concept was really made for the ADU market, because a lot of yards that they would go into have a specific amount of space that could house a home, right? So that requires it to be somewhat custom. But in our system, it just means that we just would add a few more panels. If they could fit 20 feet or if they can fit 23 feet, we add one more panel. And that way you can have exactly the type of footprint that you need. The home in Malibu that we will make as a demo house, we're looking at something like 4,600 square feet. And we think we can make that for just around, maybe just a little bit above $1 million, yeah.
And would you sell it for that, or would there be a markup on that?
No, that would be what our cost is into it. But, you know, a 4,600 square foot home, brand new in Malibu, what do you say? 6 million, you know, so this could be maybe 2.5 million or 2 million. Yeah.
Right. And is this something that you hope that governments will get on board with as well and then potentially subsidize for eligible families?
I think government should subsidize some other types of housing for especially the elderly. A pilot project that I'm proposing for San Francisco is to create more elderly housing outside of San Francisco, where, because there are a lot of elderly people who are living pretty miserable conditions in the city, and they're not served well there. And it would be far better for them to live in new, beautiful, high-quality housing that you could build outside the city, where they would have services and more community and not be isolated and live in squalor. And then those apartments could become for some of the other homeless people in the city. So it's more about creating more housing in general. The other application for this would be to do hazard housing, where you could literally have these types of homes on the flat rooftops in the city. There's so many empty lots around San Francisco where you could create this type of temporary housing, where you don't have to put in all the infrastructure. And that would just allow for people who are temporarily homeless to have a place to kind of regroup before they find where they need to go next. Because that's really the root of the problem with homelessness, is that a lot of people become semi-homeless sometime in their life. You know, it happened to me as a child. I've experienced where after my divorce, I had a hard time even finding a place to rent, which was bizarre, you know. And I'm not a poor person, but I lived in a very affluent community, and there's just very, very little housing available. So it can really hit most people. A lot of people think they're completely insulated from this until something drastic happens in their life and they realize, holy shit, I don't have a house, you know, I'd have nowhere to live.
I know one other particular area that we were discussing before was actually orphans and coming out of the system and out into the big wide world and then kind of not feeling supported, going from a home into, you know, potential rental situation. And then those people ending up a lot on the streets too.
Yes. And that's actually something that I'm very passionate about. And it's kind of the end goal with this. It is to build a program to assist with that. If you look at the statistics for foster care children, 40% end up homeless. And it's simply a factor of not having family support. So when you come out of the foster care system and there's no more government support, a lot of kids fall through, and we don't have adequate systems in our society to deal with that. And it's an absolute travesty. So that is something that I'm very, very passionate about. It's a different program, though, that I have in mind for that. It's not as housing related, even though that would be a good solution, but that requires government to come on board and create more housing for the unhoused. It's not, I mean, I think it could be a public-private initiative, but it's not something that either have been able to solve on their own. Private entities have not done anything to bring down the housing cost. You know, our system does, but we're still in the development stages. Government with a lot of zoning and regulation issues. I mean, in San Francisco, it takes 800 days to get a project approved. So they're certainly part of the problem. We have other scary stories where they have been given millions of dollars to create housing and created zero housing. So all this combined means that there has to be some other level of innovation to deal with this. And when it comes to foster care children in particular, I think that Denmark has something called the Højskole system, which is a fantastic system there that people come from all over the world to participate in. And in short, because I know this is not what this program is about, but the short story of that is that it's a cultural institution built over 100 years ago in Denmark, where they took over these big manor houses or manor properties and basically created schools for young adults. And today, it's a very elaborate network. My own son, my youngest son, is going to a sports school in Denmark, where 180 other kids will be joining him, or kids to, 18 and between 18 and 26, I think they are in this case. And they do 60 different sports. They take all the classes. There are no exams, but they build incredible, tight-knit friendships. And they learn a lot of things. They do a lot of field trips. They go to Africa. They go to Spain. They have all these things, and it costs a fraction. It costs $5,000 for the whole 5 months, and that's everything included. So the Danish government subsidizes some of that, even for foreigners to come and join, because they want to bring different people together and form these kinds of experiences. And everybody I've ever met who's done this says it's the best, biggest experience they've ever had. And they've had lifelong friends from these experiences.
Yeah, I think there's always definitely different things that we can learn from other countries. And so it's always good to be aware of what are out there, even if it's in our motherland, you know.
Yeah.
But from an environmental point of view, again, just tell me one last time why it's so important that we start using these renewable energy resources that we have available to us.
Well, I mean, as a planet, we're not doing great, right? And we know we have to make this transition. And the transition has to happen on many different levels. You know, it has to happen in transport. It has to happen in housing. It has to happen with how we use energy. And if we can make clean energy, if you could have your own home and you don't have to answer to any utility company and you can make your own energy and you can control your own pollution, you're already there.
No more monthly bills. That would be nice.
Yes, and also there's no carbon footprint to you, mm-hmm. you know, and this is kind of the goal, I think, is to bring our carbon footprint individually down to a level that, I mean, it used to be when we didn't have all the conveniences we have today. And the idea is not to give up on the conveniences, you know, we're Americans, we don't give up on things. It's about creating systems and technologies that allow us to live with the conveniences that we want, but without polluting, without creating damage for other people and our future generations. That's what this is about.
Do you think that there would be any government pushback because of them having invested in the current system?
Yes, and there already is. I mean, the American system is built on entrenched interest, right? I mean, we have a... I mean, I studied political science for 7 years, so I'll just say it. You know, we have a corrupt political system when we continue to have money in politics, right? And justices can get paid off or given camper vans and jet flights and whatever. You know, you have all this bullshit happening. That means that when a big oil company, a big energy company comes in, they control what the legislation is. And they're not interested in changing their business model. They like their business model. You know, people who have invested billions of dollars into oil infrastructure and gas fields and all that, they don't want that to go away. And if there's a new disruptive technology that comes out and changes that, you know, they're going to fight it. And they are fighting it. And they have been fighting it. I mean, they put out all this misinformation, you know, for years and years about global warming. And now they're barely being taken to task about it, you know. So, I mean, it's a sad state of affairs. And so it is necessary that we change this.
Well, it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing. So thank you for the work that you're doing over the last 4 years. I can't wait to see it come to fruition. I can't wait to see the show home in Malibu. Hopefully I can come up there and take a look at it when it's ready. And where can people find out a little bit more about what you're doing and see this prototype that you mentioned earlier?
Yes. So we have the f2r.com, and we plan to launch that after the first demo house is built, because then we have some empirical evidence to that particular pilot project is basically our proof of concept. Of course, I know it's going to work, but I just want to have something completely tangible that we're basing everything else off.
When do you hope to have that done by?
So it's being built this fall. Yeah.
Okay.
Probably by October. Yeah.
And tell us again just what F2R stands for.
Well, we haven't really set the exact name, but it's going to be something like Freedom to Reside or Freedom to Roam, or, you know, if you have a good idea, I'd like to hear it.
Yeah. Okay. Something to be off grid anyways.
Yeah, something to give you the freedom that you have the freedom to build your home, your dream home. You know, it's not going to be out of reach financially. It's not going to be something that you couldn't place somewhere because it's going to take some kind of zoning issue with your utilities, whatever, you know, something where you are empowered.
I'll have a think on it for you.
Yeah, thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you so much, Stefan. It's been so interesting to talk to you and learn more about the concept and everything that you're doing with F2R. I hope you enjoy your time up there in Lake Tahoe, and we will look forward to seeing everything that you're doing as and when that website is up and running. I'll make sure I put a link to it in the show notes. And if you do want to share a prototype with us, I'll put that on our Instagram. Our Instagram account is, of course, where you can go to find out more about the many giveaways that we've got going on with the show. So just head over to @becurious_podcast to find out how you can enter. Thank you so much once again. My name is Louise Houghton, and until next time, everyone, stay curious.